When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Into the Night is brought to you by our loyal listeners and followers. Fazbear Entertainment appreciates your viewership and those who support the show by commenting, sharing, and subscribing. If you wish to support this broadcast, please consider checking out the official merch store and Patreon for more information.
This episode is a continuation of our Security Breach audiobook series. If you haven't watched from the beginning, we recommend starting at episode 26, Security Breach, and listening to all episodes up to this point to know the full context of the storyline so far. Viewer discretion is advised. Gregory struggled to keep his lunch down as he rapidly plummeted down the large chute. His body felt like a sack of potatoes being dropped out of a jet at light speed. Time seemed to blur in and out of his consciousness as he continued to plunge, alarmingly fast the more he thought about it. Well, if these were his final moments, at least he had some company. Glamrock Chica, or what was left of her after kissing an industrial garbage compactor at the speed of 200 miles per hour, was nosediving right beside him. She was descending a bit faster than Gregory, likely due to the weight difference between them. It wasn't as if either of them could do anything to stop their freefall, and even then, the light behind Chica's eyes had literally faded, judging by how limp her body was. It didn't look like she was with Gregory anymore. Descending a garbage chute and being buried by mounds of food refuse and sewage debris, it wasn't exactly how Gregory expected his last moments on Earth to be. However, it was probably the perfect funeral rite for Glamrock Chica. She probably would have put it in her will if she could write one. Gregory observed Chica. There wasn't much he could do beyond waiting for the inevitable impact and hoping it wouldn't kill him. Thinking back, he remembered that Chica had been replaced early on. Not as early as Glamrock Bonnie, but still early. Before the plucky white hen design and a pink leotard, there was a more traditional version of Chica in the Pizzaplex. Yellow, with a talking cupcake. From what he recalled, the original Chica shared the same gluttonous personality as Glamrock Chica, but it was by no means as intensely gourmandizing. Her palate was actually more focused on edible food and desserts, rather than, well, literal garbage. According to the internal emails Gregory had been scouring, the once bright-eyed loving chicken, who was always referred to internally as the mother figure of the Glamrock band, had received complaints from staff and guests alike. Guests complained that her attitude had become more snarky and that she constantly made all interactions center around her rather than the children who came to her green room. Meanwhile, staff complained that her cupcake, which was supposed to be a silent partner reacting to her occasional absent-mindedness, had developed the personality of a pit bull. After enough complaints, she was the first in the chopping block to be removed, rebranded, and replaced. Gregory had tried to investigate what caused Chica's AI personality to shift from a loving caretaker to a narcissistic diva. He was additionally curious to see if there were any connections to Chica in the Mimic 1 AI he had learned about in Parts and Service. However, any details surrounding Chica's removal, similar to Glamrock Bonnie, Glamrock Ballora, Paps, Lally, and many other failed projects and ventures from Fazbear Entertainment in recent times, had been removed or redacted from the central servers. At least the ones Gregory had access to. For a brief period, a practical blackout had occurred, and all details surrounding these projects were removed from the central servers to a Fazbear Entertainment archive building on the outskirts of town. Unsurprisingly, Gregory concluded that Fazbear Entertainment was covering up some sort of incident from the public. But whatever had occurred, the answer could no longer be found here. A loud crash echoed at the bottom of the chute. Gregory refocused his attention to his surroundings and realized a moment too late that Chica was no longer as close to him as before. Without time to prepare, Gregory smacked the bottom of the trash chute with a dull thud after what felt like an eternity of plummeting. Miraculously, he landed on something soft, though gross and slimy, that broke his fall. While it saved him from breaking any bones, he would likely earn a nasty bruise, and the impact completely knocked the wind out of him. Moreover, the rancid smell from the trash heap caused him to immediately hurl vomit and blood. After purging, sprawled on his belly, Gregory lay there in a daze, his vision blurring. He could feel more refuse piling on top of him, moldy liquids and weak old food scraps stacking onto his back. The weight and stench became unbearable and he hurled again. After evacuating practically everything left in his stomach, he let the weight of the continuously piling refuse take him, surrendering any attempt to pick himself up. The world around him began to be consumed by darkness, and he slowly slipped into unconsciousness. This is episode 36, The Storyteller, part 1.
Many moons ago, before the security breach,
I feel like you're boxing us in here. These numbers can't be real.
Edwin Murray was enduring another one of a myriad of pointless board meetings that all seemed to blend together. Seated at the far end of the outlandishly large cherry wood table, he occupied the chair nearest the door, ensuring he could swiftly exit once the chit-chat concluded. He really had no point in being here. Edwin was simply an advisor to the board of Fazbear Entertainment, someone to balance out their whims with some level-headed thinking now and again. Not that his advisements were often heeded. He felt he had more in common with the mascots of Fazbear Entertainment than he did with any of the other 9 board members present, especially the company's CEO, Mr. Burroughs. However, since Fazbear Entertainment bought out his company in the 80s, whether they liked it or not, when the company revived itself, so did their contract with him, which gave him both executive tenure and a permanent seat at the Big Wigs table. Thus, much to everyone's chagrin, including his own, he was expected to be here, even if it meant struggling to keep his eyes open and staying present in the moment. Shockingly, today's meeting was a bit unusual, since it was actually significant to the company's health. From the meeting brief he skimmed over this morning, one of the heads of accounting had concluded in his quarterly report that the company was overspending way too much in assets, resulting in significant losses from expenses. That's legally speak, the company was bleeding money faster than the crypto market, and it mainly had to do with poor management. Not that the accountant could exactly say that, nor did he seem to have the guts to broach the subject of fault. He was practically shaking his boots by being stared down by Mr. Burroughs. Mr. Burroughs, the youngest CEO of the company's history, as he often loved to boast at corporate gatherings. He possessed a Romanesque nose and an imposing stature that could easily unsettle those around him upon first impression. His jawline was sharp, his cheekbones prominent, and his mouth full and strong. Yet, to those who knew him well, like Edwin, these features appeared more severe than handsome. His small, closely set eyes, nearly black in their dark brown hue, gave his gaze a disconcerting intensity. His shiny, ebony hair, which lightly flopped over his broad forehead, attempted to add a touch of charm, but to Edwin just made him more unkempt and unruly. He was wearing his usual gaudy attire, a burgundy silk tie, a crisp blue cotton shirt, and a matching fine suit coat. Perched on his nose were a pair of reading glasses, though Edwin was unsure if he actually needed them or if they were merely his attempt to look more scholarly than he actually was. Another one of Mr. Burroughs' favorite boasts was his prodigious intellect. He reveled the chance to regale people with the fact that he graduated college at the age of 13, and boasted about his IQ, which he claimed, if it were to be measured in miles, would surpass the moon and touch the surface of Mars, which is why he took a job at Fazbear Entertainment. Yes, very big brain, as the kids would say, Mr. Burroughs. Burroughs scanned the hefty spreadsheet in his hand, his dark eyes traversing the rows of numbers for the third time in complete silence. Finally, he spoke up again.
If these numbers are correct, the Mega Pizzaplex won't make one red cent the way it's currently set up. That is the box. I refuse to be trapped in a box. This will mean having to pare things down, shaving down the excess so we can increase our profits to get us out of the box.
Mr. Burroughs wasn't so much talking to the board, nor the accountant, as much as he was talking out loud to himself. Edwin surmised that in Mr. Burroughs' mind, the board should be grateful to garner some insight into such an erudite of business acumen. Burroughs removed his glasses and pointed them at the paper, specifically at the large red figure on the loss margin.
Again, is this figure correct?
Sweat was practically leaking from the skinny accountant's forehead like a broken faucet. Edwin knew the kid. Dale was his name, and he epitomized the definition of prodigy far better than Mr. Burroughs did. Dale was a numerical savant, and a riot when he wasn't visibly shaking in his boots for no other reason than to soothe the boss's ego. Mr. Burroughs knew the numbers were accurate. He simply relished intimidating those beneath him, asserting his dominance over those beneath his heel. Dale nervously tugged on his shirt collar.
Yes, sir. I ran the figures several times and...
Mr. Burroughs waved his hand to dismiss the accountant. Edwin noticed the light streaming through the large picture window, which occupied most of the boardroom's outer wall, shimmering off the diamonds on Mr. Burroughs' pinky ring. Burroughs seemed to notice it too. A small smile crept his lips as he admired the rainbow of colors refracted from his ring. Mr. Burroughs fancied himself a bit of a designer or artist. He had a particular fondness for colors, especially reds, blues, and yellows. The conference room, if not the entire executive office complex, was waterboarded in those colors, desperately gasping for the air of simplicity. The walls were adorned with impressionist paintings depicting the classic Fazbear ensemble, all of Mr. Burroughs' preferred colors, of course. While the clash of these vibrant paintings against the red walls could strain anyone's eyes, the carpet at least provided a neutral gray oasis, offering a simple and calming contrast. The decision on the carpet colors was actually Edwin's idea, one of the few times he managed to sway the board of bobblehead shakers away from agreeing with Mr. Burroughs. As is often the case with the managerial class, they seldom heed reason or logic until it begins to impact their day-to-day lives. Dale coughed, drawing Mr. Burroughs and Edwin's attention back to the conversation at hand.
I'm sure the numbers are right, but even if it was not exact, the import is clear. Clearly, creative development is gobbling up a massive chunk of our overhead. The team is going to need some chainsaw consultation to clear a path for us out of the woods.
Edwin's eyes widened.
Did I just hear you correctly? Did you suggest downsizing? The heart and soul of this business? Firing the very people who have been responsible for the Pizzaplex's enthusiastic popularity?
I take issue with your premise. The creative team has contributed to the Pizzaplex success, obviously, but to say they've been responsible for it is to strain the truth to the breaking point.
I prefer to call it giving credit where credit is due.
Spending this much money on creative content, nothing more than the ideas of people sitting around making stuff up, is unfeasible. The backbone of the Pizzaplex, in fact of Fazbear Entertainment as a whole, isn't the stories or the characters, it's the technology. Without the tech, without the hardware of the animatronics, and the software that runs them, the stories are nothing. We might as well be selling camping excursions, requesting, if not begging, people to pay us a dime a pop to hear a tale by the fire while they roast a marshmallow.
Edwin snorted and crossed his arms.
I can tell you, from years of experience, most of which came from a time before you were born, Sonny, that without a story of personality to bring life to your husks of metal and crisscross of wires, your technology is nothing more than a mass of zeros and ones. Story. That's what drives Fazbear Entertainment.
Mr. Burroughs wasn't listening. He was more engrossed in playing with his flashy pinky ring than paying attention to Edwin.
Be that as it may, we need to get in the black.
I agree, but...
I'm not suggesting we give up on story development, Edwin.
Edwin felt his jaw muscles tighten at the way Mr. Burroughs emphasized his name. Burroughs enjoyed placing extra stress on the win part of his name. It was deliberate, a verbal slap in the face, a constant reminder of Edwin's inferior status compared to him. A loser who was only here because his own company had failed. Burroughs took every opportunity to underscore that Edwin wasn't a winner at all.
Wouldn't you agree, ladies and gentlemen of the board, that Fazbear Entertainment has the best minds in the industry?
Our Edwin rolled his eyes as he watched the oblivious board members nod along with Burroughs' monologue. Burroughs knew damn well that no one was going to argue with him. Edwin tuned out Mr. Burroughs. He didn't need to hear him wax eloquently over the company's achievements, so he instead shifted his focus on the other members of the board. At 64 years old, he was the oldest person in the room, although he thanked the Lord that he wasn't the boldest. Everyone in the room exuded wealth, except for Edwin. If a group of criminals were to break in and hold everyone at gunpoint, Edwin knew he'd likely be overlooked. The executive's jewelry alone would fetch hundreds of thousands, and he doubted his old Timex watch would make a significant contribution to that haul. Edwin never considered himself a good-looking fellow, nor a fashionable one, even at the same age as Burroughs. His greatest feats were always his imagination and intellect. While he wasn't overly concerned with his appearance, he liked to present himself with a touch of flair. Standing at 5'5" tall, Edwin was slight and skinny. When he was younger, his round nose, big ears, and slanted blue eyes earned him the childhood nickname of the Freakishly Tall Gnome. Now, in the later half of his life, he decided to embrace his old nickname and turn what others perceived as a defect into a virtue. He grew out his thick white hair and groomed a short, pointed white beard to go along with his full mustache that he took pride in ever since he grew it.
Personally, I see no reason why the creative process can't be automated.
Edwin snapped back to the present reality.
What?
Mr. Burroughs rolled his eyes condescendingly.
Oh, come now. You can't tell me that story creation can't be computerized. Record labels use software to write songs. I don't see why we couldn't similarly create stories in the same manner. We could replace most, if not all, of the creative team with one computer. And just like that, we're out of the box.
Computers cannot write stories.
Why not? All of Fazbear Entertainment's most popular assets are made of the same elements with a few tweaks. I dare say that combining these elements with, say, a series of pre-programmed options could be used in concert to come up with new, always fresh, randomly generated stories. You clearly aren't getting it, old man. Think of it like a smorgasbord. The average buffet probably has, what, 40 or 50 dishes? Meats, casseroles, salads, and so on. And most of these dishes are made with the same base ingredients, which can be used to create a virtually endless variety of meals with said ingredients. We can use the principle to create a computer program that would combine various tropes and characters to come up with an endless variety of stories. We can call it the Storyteller. What do you all think?
Edwin looked around at the table of yes-men immediately falling into their routine. Compliments and affirmations abounded, with not a single ounce of rational or critical thought present in the room. Edwin couldn't take it anymore. He slammed his fist onto the table. The board stopped their flattery and looked at Edwin with a mixture of shock and fear.
I can't believe you're all talking about firing dozens of dedicated employees who gave you their creative genius all to replace it with a computer.
Mr. Burroughs leaned forward, the creak of his fancy black leather seat drawing the attention of the board back to him.
We could even turn the Storyteller into part of the Pizzaplex's appeal. It could be a huge draw, not just a cost save, but a profit generator. It would be the star of every show, the Pizzaplex's narrator, its virtual ringmaster.
Edwin pounded his fist on the table again, causing the board members to whisper their gazes back to him, some clutching their pearls in surprise.
The only evidence I see here of a circus is the jester at the helm. You're pitching a ludicrous idea here, Burroughs. Your course of action will be a slap in the face to all the hardworking people who have created all the storylines. You are blamed to be devoured by some computer.
Mr. Burroughs' usual clean white complexion now sported a slight hue of red around his cheekbones.
Hardworking doesn't mean it's good. If their stories were good enough, the Pizzaplex would be making enough revenue to take care of our bottom line as well as their expensive salaries. Even you have to admit there is room for improvement here, and I think that we should hand the task of the improvement over to the tech department. They can create our storyteller.
Edwin stood up so quickly from his chair that it spun up behind him and hit the glass wall.
Oh, I agree the company could improve its bottom line, but by budgeting its resources, perhaps by starting from the top instead of looking to make cuts at the bottom.
Burroughs has responded with an open-hand slap on the table. The faint sound of a gem shattering whimpered beneath the impact. He looked at his palm. In his rage, he had damaged the pinky ring he so loved to admire. No one on the board dared to speak. One gentleman removed his handkerchief and wiped away a couple of beads of sweat from his forehead. Burroughs clenched his fist, but soon collected himself.
Edwin's childish outburst aside, who here is among those in favor of creating our storyteller and letting it take the place of our current creative team?
A brief but heavy silence settled in the room. Then, one by one, every man and woman in the room raised their hands to side with Burroughs. Edwin could hear his heart pounding in his ears.
Unbelievable, unbelievable! You're a bunch of idiotic yes-men, mouth-breathing sacks of
shit. Careful, old man. You're close to getting kicked out of this meeting, if not the company.
Edwin smiled, smoothed his beard, and straightened his shoulders confidently.
Oh, don't get too big for your britches, Sonny. You can't fire me. No one here can. You would know that if you ever bothered to read my buyout contract. But given your disposition to story crafting, I'd be surprised if you could read it all. And I may not have a lot of power here, but I can at least...
You can do nothing.
Mr. Burroughs pointed at Edwin like he was flicking a pesky mosquito. A small curve appeared on the side of his lips.
But tell you what, because I'm feeling magnanimous, we'll make you a consultant on the project. You can have some input on what story elements are programmed into the storyteller. Sounds like a good compromise to me. What do you say?
Another quiet moment stirred. Edwin felt his chest constrict. His doctor had warned him not to get so riled up. It wasn't good for his heart. But Edwin wasn't just riled up. He was downright abhorrently furious. His face burned with heat, and he could feel his fingers tingling from the rage coursing through his body.
If we are finished with the theatrics, perhaps you could retake your seat? Peg, please help Edwin back to his chair.
Peg, one of the female board members, got up from her seat and pulled Edwin's chair back to the table. She then took his arm and escorted him like he was a geriatric. He wanted to lash out at Peg, but he was too much of a gentleman to do that. Edwin had his issues. He knew that. He'd been haunted for years by things that he should have done differently. But while he longed for home, he didn't need to be treated like he belonged in one. Besides, Peg was a pretty nice lady. So Edwin gave her a soft smile as she helped him back to his chair, whilst imagining setting the entire building and everyone in it on fire.
There. Now let's continue. I propose that we put together a tech team to create and program the storyteller. It shouldn't take too many bodies, and to save money, we shouldn't have to hire anyone new. Just pull some people off some projects and move some staff around to compensate.
Edwin's heart was still galloping in his chest, but he was attempting to calm himself down, concentrating on his respiration and some deep breathing exercises. Mr. Burroughs' idea, like too many other Phasma Entertainment adventures that he had seen throughout the decades, was extraordinarily short-sighted. Right off the top of his head, you could think of dozens of ways the storyteller could go wrong. If he had any chance of preventing this from becoming a full-blown disaster, something akin to the incident with the toy animatronics in the late 80s, but on a much larger scale, he needed to keep it together. No one here would listen to him if he was ranting and raving like a lunatic. Edwin raised his hand, like a good little schoolboy. The board cast nervous side glances at him, except for Peg, who smiled warmly. Mr. Burroughs cracked his knuckles slowly and responded with clenched teeth.
Yes, Edwin?
Edwin exerted all the willpower he could muster to keep his voice measured and neutral.
You know, you keep talking about the program, choosing elements from pre-existing narratives and equating them to a buffet with the company's characters, plots, and themes. How will the storyteller determine how to combine the elements you program into a successful story to tell?
The board turned their attention to Mr. Burroughs, who pursed his lips and gave Edwin a cold stare. That glare may draw fear out of most people. Edwin, however, was unaffected. He knew his signal Burroughs lacked a concrete answer to the question. He was merely offering a concept with no solid plan to back it up. Edwin was about to capitalize onto that, at least attempt to appeal to the board to listen to reason. However, just as he was about to speak up, the male board member with the handkerchief abruptly shifted the topic.
What should the storyteller look like?
That's a good question. If the storyteller will itself be a character seen by the Pizza Plexus patrons, it will have to be something other than just a garden variety computer interface.
Well, think of something. Maybe we should let the storyteller itself choose what it's going to look like.
A rumble of laughter swept over the room like an ocean wave rushing in. Edwin didn't join in, though. Even though his heart rate was under control and expression was placid, his mind was screaming warning bells like a tornado siren, alerting him to an impending, unmitigated disaster. And underneath that whirlwind of anxiety and stress was a strong sense of deja vu. And that wasn't a good sign. No, not a good sign at all.
It's decided then. We'll get the design team working on the storyteller ASAP.
Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day of being alive. Edwin opened his eyes, winced, and then closed them again with a groan. A sliver of blazing sunshine pierced through the slats of Edwin's yellow, sagging Venetian blinds. Unless the clouds granted Edwin a reprieve, the sun stabbed through his slumber every morning, yanking him from the sweet oblivion of sleep and forcing him to face another day of existence. Edwin could have done something about the blinds to improve his sleep. He could have bought new curtains and hung them up to block out the sun. But he didn't. In fact, he could have simply nailed one of his blankets to the wall over his bedroom window. but it didn't do that either. He had once considered using one of those moondrop spheres to enhance his sleeping habits, but he didn't do that, although his hesitancy there was thankfully rewarded. Edwin rolled out of his narrow, lumping bed, his knee joints cracking as he placed his feet on the floor. His back was sore, and the assaulting rays of sun in his bedroom meant any hope of finding respite here was lost to time, a battle he had waged and lost repeatedly throughout his life. Rubbing the dry rheum that had accumulated in the corner of his eyes, Edwin surveyed the sad, lonely space where he spent his nights. The dirty peach-colored walls remained bare, bar some water stains. Despite having some old vintage posters of Freddy Fazbear Pizzeria collecting dust in a closet somewhere, he never hung them up in his pathetic one-bedroom apartment. They once adorned the walls of the executive offices, but when Mr. Burroughs became the new chairman, the entire building had to endure a new dictator, along with a new interior designer. Burroughs had ordered them to all be disposed of, but Edwin rescued them and took them home. Edwin wasn't sure why he'd wanted them. They didn't provide him any comfort, and the memories they invoked were far from nostalgic. If he'd been forced to explain himself, he would probably have to admit that keeping them was a form of self-punishment. Those old Fazbear characters reminded Edwin of a past he'd rather have forgotten, sins he needed to atone for, but had no way to do it. Maybe keeping images and iconography of Freddy Fazbear was a way to keep himself on the hook for all the mistakes he'd made. An invisible wound that couldn't be seen. A wound that festered and burned ever since the day he agreed to sell his company to, at the time, the behemoth that was Fazbear Entertainment. Edwin got up and began going through his usual morning rigmarole. Despite his efforts to contribute during the company's active days and maintain a semblance of normalcy, he often found himself mentally absent. He was rarely actually present in the moment. He lived primarily in his head, in the past, back in the days before he made a hash of everything. Over 30 years ago, his therapist had advised him that he should be more mindful of his surroundings, to stop dwelling on what is no longer real, and concentrate on the details of the present around him. Yeah, that was easier said than done. Eventually, Edwin just gave up on trying. Yes, he was physically present and moved through the real world, but he rarely saw much of it. His surroundings were often obscured by the visions of his old life, endless replays of his worst mistakes, and memories of what he once had and lost. As Edwin buttoned up his collared shirt, he glanced once again around his barren apartment. The sour smell of sweat and fried eggs seemed to have left a permanent stain on the walls. If anyone had told Edwin 40 years ago that this would be his final destination, he would have laughed himself silly. Edwin Murray, brilliant engineer and creative genius, a man destined for greatness, now living in an unkept squalor, which, besides the bed, scarred dresser, and a wobbly nightstand, which came with the apartment, only contained a bare amount of possessions he could call his own. His clothes, toiletries, a handful of books, and a small, dingy item that sat beleaguered on the top of the dresser. Edwin wiped away memories of the person who once cherished that small white plushie, and readied himself for work. Locking up his ratty apartment, even though there wasn't anything inside a burglar would want to steal, Edwin hopped into his old compact stand and made his morning trip to the Freddy Fazbear Mega Pizzaplex. Although this time around, his destination was more specifically adjacent to the Mega Pizzaplex, the Fazplex Towers. Edwin had a word or two to say to Mr. Burroughs about the CEO's new pet project, the Storyteller. It had been a few weeks since construction of the Storyteller began. In fact, progress on the project as a whole felt like it had been going at the speed of light, or so it seemed to Edwin. He tried his best to stall the attraction, but it was no use. Every techie on the team was practically tweaking with glee to work on what was soon to be the Pizzaplex's new star attraction. and the board never once opened the door again for his ideas after he tried to suggest the storyteller be confined to a remote part of the Pizzaplex. His proposal hinged on the concept of giving it an enigmatic aura, perfect for fans who enjoyed the mysteries of the Pizzaplex and the Fazbear brand. But Mr. Burroughs basically heckled him in front of the board, and instead suggested, or more accurately commanded, the storyteller to be built right smack in the center of the Pizzaplex's main atrium. He was like a dictator, ordering a grandiose statue of himself to be constructed in the middle of town square. The construction of the central hub began days after the board approved the creation of the storyteller. As work progressed on the interior, Mr. Burroughs had the audacity to call Edwin during the foundational construction phase to pitch a radically new design concept that would inevitably delay the project.
I think the storyteller should reside in a huge fake tree, like a wise old owl in an old growth forest, kind of like our own tree of life. Since, as you put it, story is the lifeblood of Fazbear Entertainment, it just makes sense that the storyteller should be the lifeblood of the Pizzaplex.
The construction workers were clearly annoyed, but thankfully, Edwin didn't have to offer an explanation. They sighed and began to deconstruct what they had already built. It was well known, even to the most insouciant employee of Fazbear Entertainment, that Edwin and Burroughs hated each other. When the project became public, some rumors even spread suggesting that Edward being a consultant was an informal form of punishment for undermining Burroughs' authority. Personally, Edwin didn't think Mr. Burroughs had given him the job for that reason. It was more likely just to shut him up. However, when Edwin endured the first design team meeting to decide on the style and shape of the storyteller tree, he began to see the validity of the idea emerge. The entire meeting was practically a series of non-stop shots in the dark, with suggestions lacking any real plan and no one making any executive decision to avoid offending anyone or causing a rift. This continued for 30 minutes until a burly engineer finally proposed a design based on an elm tree, which resulted in the entire conversation devolving into a shouting match. Suddenly, everyone who had been previously placidly agreeing with ideas started pushing their own amidst the chaos. Redwood, eucalyptus, olive, fig, everyone had an opinion, and nobody liked it. If this truly was Mr. Burroughs' plan to torture him, Edwin had to admit, it was genius. Fed up with the bickering, he decided to put his foot down. Clearing his throat, he spoke above the imbroglio.
Bobob.
After an hour of silence from him, the entire team fell quiet and turned to stare at him. He continued before they could all start up again.
The baobab tree is one of the longest living trees in the world, and it's one of the hardiest. Baobabs thrive in the harshest of conditions, in the droughts of Africa and Asia. They're bizarre looking. Their trunks can be over 30 feet in diameter, the width of which would suit our purposes perfectly, giving the engineer team plenty of room to work with in building the technical elements, and the design team a large canvas to design the exterior of the storyteller.
The name of that contraption, it still made him sick to his stomach. The moment the words left his lips, he was afraid the nausea that welled up would also lurch at his lunch, but he swallowed it, along with his pride, and continued on, determined to ignore it.
There's a baobab tree in South Africa that's, I think, over 6,000 years old. Its trunk is hollow, and it's a tourist attraction now. There are all sorts of legends associated with the baobab tree as well. Given that the tree we use is housing the Pizzaplex's grand storyteller, choosing a tree associated with grand narratives seems apropos.
Several team members nodded in agreement, and a couple of techies began browsing images of baobab trees on their phones. Baobab trees were a little weird-looking, but they were cool, which is the most politically apt way to describe Fazbear Entertainment. Baobab trees look similar to oak trees that had been uprooted and put back on the ground upside down. It seemed like the design team were really inspired by the idea. While Edwin himself still wasn't pleased with the project overall, he did feel an unexpected sense of satisfaction from having made a significant contribution to it. Of course, then one of the tech guys had to ask if the team should decide to be a thicker and taller or shorter and rounder. And that sparked another 15 minutes of conversation, which caused Edwin to imagine himself break-free mountain biking. At the end of it all, the team had agreed to design a tree with a trunk that had a vaguely bulbous appearance, 15 feet in diameter at the bottom, swelling to about 25 feet across at about 10 feet or so up the trunk, and then narrowing to just a few feet wide as the trunk stood another 50 feet tall, all the way up to its branches. The trunk would extend all the way up to the dome roof of the Pizzaplex's atrium, and the branches would encroach and entangle all across the Pizzaplex's ceiling. Edwin parked his sedan in the Fazplex's parking lot and gazed up at the towering skyscraper. Its sleek silver steel frame and glistening glass reflected the morning sun. The lower 20 floors housed the Fazbear Entertainment executive offices, including Mr. Burroughs's corporate suite. Above them, the upper 20 floors featured high-tech apartments, complete with an event area, a state-of-the-art gym, and a rooftop swimming pool. Edwin had toured one of the vacant units before, and he had to admit they were quite impressive. The apartments were spacious and modern, equipped with artificial intelligent helpers called the Bobby Dots, displayed on glass screens throughout the apartment walls. Technically, Edwin could have lived in the Fazplex himself. Only people with a high-level position could request an apartment, and if accepted, Fazbear Entertainment was surprisingly generous enough to provide it for free. However, Edwin resisted the allure of the Fazplex. He didn't desire comfort, and he felt undeserving of it as well. Besides, he doubted he could bear living so close to Mr. Burroughs. Edwin walked into the sleek foyer, striding past the modern reception desk adorned with minimalist decor. He made his way across the polished marble floor to the back of the lobby, where he called for an elevator. Edwin's concerns stemmed from the rapid pace of construction of the storyteller. With little else to do, he had resorted to lingering around the construction zone for the past few weeks, simply observing as the tree slowly took shape. It was becoming increasingly tedious to essentially watch paint dry every day, especially given the garish color palette Mr. Burroughs had chosen. Initially, the design team had settled on a pleasing tan color, but Burroughs found it too dull. He insisted on a bright yellow, as vibrant as the yellow hue of the roller coaster's tracks. Thankfully, the design team recognized the disastrous nature of that request. While they did change the palette, they took the initiative to mitigate the jarring impact of the yellow as best they could. They painted the tree in several tones and shades of brightness to mimic the appearance of bark. Unfortunately, Mr. Burroughs hadn't had his fill of being God for a day, so he had also commanded that the tree branches for the storyteller to be similarly fanciful, stating that they should be the color of the rainbow. Now, the tree that Edwin had been watching grow in the middle of the atrium defied all that Mother Nature holds dear. It had transformed into a pear-shaped pillar adorned with a kaleidoscope array of sparkling multicolored branches. LED lights pulsed with energy along the root system of the tree, which gnarly curled from the base and extended beneath the floorboards, beneath the black and white tiles of the concourse. And it was that root system in particular that was getting Edwin's anxiety on high alert. The elevator doors finally opened, unleashing a wave of well-dressed suits and stay-at-home parents with their children, all ready for school. Edwin stepped into the elevator, surprisingly alone, and pressed the button for Burroughs' executive suite floor. As the doors closed, the elevator began its ascent. When Edwin inquired about the root system to the tech team, which he found gaudy and thought could have been simplified visually, like the branches, a department head named Yvette explained that the different designs served a practical purpose rather than a visual appeal. The root system was in actuality a network of wiring that would connect to various server rooms across the Pizzaplex. This wiring would synchronize with story-driven attractions, such as the animatronics themselves, and transmit their new programming, essentially their instructions and commands for the day, through the storyteller via its tree roots. Edwin was impressed, but had two major concerns immediately come to mind. One was the durability of the wires. If these were tilling their way all throughout the Pizzaplex, it would only take one route to fail before the entire system could potentially begin crashing down. However, Yvette assured him that this wasn't going to be a problem. The system utilized fiber optic cables directly connected to the storyteller's main terminal computer. Edwin very much wanted to see those fiber optic cables, but he wasn't allowed inside the tree trunk, and that was something he took great issue with. As his next major concern, he is concerned for the entirety of the Storyteller Project's existence was the actual artificial intelligence of the Storyteller itself. At no point was he ever informed on who was developing it, where it was exactly located inside the tree, or what past storylines was being fed into his database. If he was to stop this from turning into as massive of a disaster as he was expecting this would become, he needed every ounce of information he could garner. The only issue was every time he tried to extract any info from the design team or the tech team, he was met with the same roadblock. And its name was Mr. Burroughs. The elevator door slid open, and Edwin began marching down the long, wide hallway on the top floor of the executive office portion of the Fazplex. Edwin inwardly cursed the ground he walked on. Since this was Burroughs' personal domain, he had complete control of the design elements, including the plush carpet that felt like he was walking on memory foam. He charged past portraits on golden walls of past executives, which alternated between them and cartoonish depictions of the Fazbear Ensemble over the decades. It seemed intended to elevate management's importance alongside the company's characters, but Edwin saw it as a testament to the company's short-sightedness, equating its leadership to the goofball mascots entertaining thousands daily inside the Pizzaplex with their antics. Edwin finally reached Mr. Burroughs' office. The secretary stationed nearby inquired if he had an appointment, but he avoided eye contact with her and gripped the handle of one of the large ebony double doors and barged right in.
"Why, Edwin, what a pleasure."
Mr. Burroughs was seated in a crocodile leather chair behind a grand Queen Anne credenza desk. He didn't divert his attention from the array of flat screens in front of him until Edwin slammed the door and strode forward, planting his palms on his desk.
"Shall I move some things, make a bit of space for your rage?"
Burroughs clicked off some screens and met Edwin's glare directly with a cheeky smirk.
"Why can't I see inside the tree?"
"Oh, that. No one is allowed inside the tree, Edwin."
Burroughs leaned back in his chair and interlaced his fingers.
"We have to protect company secrets. Imagine if our competitors were to gain access to the AI. The tree itself will be enough of a draw for the masses. It's just the curtain that covers it while it works behind the scenes. It keeps our company secrets private and adds to the mystique of it. Our own little Wizard of Oz."
Did you just compare your big project to a character whose biggest claim to fame was that he was a liar and a fraud?"
"Touché."
Edwin sighed and shook his head.
"Regardless, someone is clearly allowed access inside the tree. It's not like our Tree of Life is being made by magic elves."
"Oh, how droll of you, Edwin. Yes, of course, the construction crew is allowed inside, but no one else is. Even I haven't been inside the trunk. It's all very hush-hush."
"But you're the chairman of the board."
"Why would I want to spoil the surprise? Do you unwrap your gifts before Christmas, Edwin? If you do, shame, shame."
Mr. Burroughs gestured his hand at Edwin as if he were trying to shoo him away. Edwin bit the inside of his cheek. He had a lot he wanted to say, but it wouldn't be of any use at all. Whatever was going on with the inner workings of the storyteller was something Burroughs was not willing to divulge. And Edwin suspected it was because he knew Edwin would reject the notion or possibly report it to the board. Edwin calmly got up and walked out, suppressing the sensation of Burroughs' eyes boring into his back like daggers. He ignored the feeling and kept walking. Short of snatching him by his collars, Burroughs couldn't keep him away from prying into the storyteller more. Although Burroughs could conceal his secrets all day long, he was a man who liked to talk. A lot. Such men, confident in their silver tongues, often willingly reveal too much while attempting to say too little. In this instance, where Edwin could find the answers he sought, He had been watching that monster of a tree be constructed for days now, and not once did the construction team enter inside of it. This could only mean one thing. The team who worked on the storyteller's AI was the construction crew at night. Precisely the time Burroughs would know Edwin was supposed to be away. Into the Night will be right back after these messages. It was 11:42 p.m. on a drizzly Thursday evening when Edwin slipped into the Pizzaplex. For the past 3 days, Edwin would unceremoniously dip from his observation point around the construction zone and surreptitiously gather any and all working memos related to the storyteller that he could get his hands on. Thankfully, Fazbear Entertainment's security was historically lackluster, and it wasn't stellar in the executive offices either. As he expected, Burroughs was going to great lengths to keep any and all knowledge about the inner workings of the storyteller under wraps. The night crew's internal communication network was practically compartmentalized away from all other Fazbear Entertainment projects. Separate message boards, private group chats, with only the rare sightings of correspondents traveling around on paper or through a public channel. However, one message caught his scavenger eye, and fortunately, it was the lead he had been searching for. A significant component of the storyteller was scheduled to be transferred into the tree trunk late one night, after the Pizzaplex closed. Edwin was confident he could position himself at the right time and place to catch a glimpse of what was being moved into the atrium. And he was right. He was able to easily bypass the security curtain into the loading docks. The drab, concrete-walled area had been deserted for the day, just as he expected, and he had no trouble of weaving his way through the back halls until he could make his way into the atrium. Keeping close to the walls, he maneuvered toward the jungle-like fake foliage of Monty's Gator Gulf. One of the larger plastic plants was big enough that he could easily hide behind it with plenty of cover on all sides of him, yet still offered a perfect vantage point from which to observe the entrance of the storyteller, at least what he presumed was the entrance. Edwin waited for another 15 minutes within the faux swamp, enduring the abhorrent smell of lemon from the cleaning team's sanitation spray, until he heard the distant thud of men shouting down the halls on the opposite side of the atrium. Perking up, he brushed aside a thick plastic leaf and spotted at least a dozen workers moving several large wooden crates on trolleys. The clear team leader swiped a few commands on his tablet, prompting a section of the storyteller's tree trunk to release a volley of steam. A hidden curved panel was split in half and slid inside the trunk, revealing an opening to get inside. Unfortunately, the interior was shrouded in shadows, and Edwin could only make out a few specks of red and blue light.
All right, lads. Doors open at 6 a.m., so we've got about 5 hours to get all this stuff moved into the storyteller tree. Now, pick up the closest thing to you and let's get a move on.
Two engineers retrieved matching Fazbear crowbars and began undoing the nails in the crate, prying open the lids with a loud crack before moving on to the next one in line. Meanwhile, other construction crew members hauled out mechanical wiring and metallic joints from the boxes. Initially unsure of what they were removing, Edwin's heart skipped a beat when one engineer pulled out a familiar object that nearly doubled him over. For several seconds, Edwin found it hard to breathe. Gasping audibly for air, Edwin clutched his chest as a sharp pain shot through his ribcage. His heartbeat thundered in his ears, racing so fast it constricted his lungs, leaving him gasping for air.
Did you hear that?
Edwin shrunk back into the shadows of the faux jungle. He dropped into a crouch, closed his eyes, and covered his ears with his hands. Edwin wasn't pulling an infantile stunt, blocking out the outside world and retreating to a dark void in an attempt to be invisible.
What's wrong, kiddo?
Sounded like someone else was here.
He's just trying to get out of working.
No, I swear something's over there, boss. I'm telling you.
Edwin heard a flurry of footsteps approaching him, their sound muffled like a distant television. It wasn't that Edwin was actively hiding from them. If the workers found him, they found him. The reason he was trying to shut out his senses was because they were transporting him back into a horror from his past. A nightmare he had spent years locking away behind various mental chains, locks, and keys. The sounds. A screech and a scream. His own yelling. The aftermath. Blood. There was so much blood. And the aroma was gut-wrenching, mixed with the grim scent of hot metal. Edwin gagged at the sudden assault on his nostrils. He wanted to moan. Part of him wanted to cry or run away. No, he remembered what he saw. If this was the storyteller that Mr. Burroughs was setting up to be in charge of the behind-the-scenes story direction for Fazbear Entertainment, he couldn't be found here. If he was caught trespassing, it would limit his chances for minimizing the storyteller's potential damage. Edwin forced himself to endure the memories flooding back, trembling from head to toe. He sweated profusely until his mouth went dry, feeling his brain swell within his skull. Hot tears streaked down his cheeks, and the smell of fresh blood still lingered in his senses. But beyond his initial gasp, he didn't utter another single sound.
Are you sure a sound came from over there?
I thought I heard.
I think you're just hearing things, kid.
Come on, let's get this thing in there so we can wrap up and take off.
You letting the scary pizzeria get you.
Stop! Get away from me!
Oi! Knock it off, you two! Act your bloody age for once in your lives!
Don't tell me you're freaked out about this place, too.
Oh, don't get it twisted now. I don't got the case of the shakes. I'm just being cautious. Don't tell me you dunderheads have forgotten what happened to Grady and the whole Ballora attraction incident. Bloody hell, the whole attraction had to be closed down. Do you want the same thing to happen to you? No? Well then, stop being a bunch of numbskulls and let's get a move on!
Edwin commanded himself to pull it together, easing slowly back toward his original vantage point. Concentrating on soft, steady breaths, he mentally prepared for a second look at what had triggered him. Hoping the workers wouldn't notice him, he cautiously raised his head until he could see the tree. There it was, being carried by the younger and older worker who were just searching for him. The thing that stared back at him whenever he closed his eyes at night and faced the abyss. Edwin gritted his teeth and held his breath, his body still trembling, legs threatening to give way. The men were struggling to carry a giant white tiger head into the metallic hollow trunk. Obviously, it wasn't a real tiger head, but a metallic replica of one. It looked like both the workers were struggling to carry it, let alone find a good grip. The 3-foot-wide head, painted white, rose nearly 4 feet from the tiger's shoulders, its underside smooth and gleaming silver. The edges shone like polished platinum. For all Edwin knew, the entire head could have been made of platinum, but the one in his nightmares was not. Grunting and groaning, the three men, accompanied by a cacophonous parade of half a dozen workers, began to wrestle other parts of the tiger animatronic through the tree's open doorway. They disappeared into the shadows that obscured the trunk's interior, and once they did, Edwin exhaled loudly. He immediately turned and retraced his steps. There was nothing more for him here, but he couldn't allow for a demon to play with a devil that didn't understand. He needed to stop this before it was too late, before others suffered at the hands of a creature, a monster that he had unwittingly helped to create. There was that annoying curmudgeon. Mr. Burroughs was seated in his personally picked crocodile leather chair facing his array of flat screens atop his Queen Anne credenza, watching last night's security footage. It was just as he was told by the security team. Edwin squatting behind the front edge of Monty's Gator Golf, spying on the night shift crew for the storyteller. Mr. Burroughs sighed. Edwin had been a thorn in his side ever since he took the helm of the company. Due to the company's long history of financial frugality, destitution, and now revival, Edwin's contract granted him staying power and an exorbitantly large salary he had no way earned. Normally, he was just a gnat that buzzed around him during meetings, confrontational and adversarial with him because he knew he was legally untouchable. But ever since the Storyteller Project began, that gnat had turned into a rat constantly scurrying and plaguing every step of the new project's construction. Mr. Burroughs steepled his fingers and watched Mary a bit closer. Edwin's eyes were bulging out of his sockets. What was he doing? Edwin began to flounder around, and Mr. Burroughs frowned, leaning closer with a fleeting spark of concern crossing his mind. However, he quickly recalled that security had only mentioned Edwin breaking in the previous night. If there had been anything more serious, like a discovery of a body, he reasoned he would have been informed of that detail immediately. Shaking his head, Mr. Burroughs tapped a key to stop the security video's replay. He made a mental note to praise the security team for bringing Murray's actions to his attention. Thankfully, Murray wasn't an immediate issue. Yet. The only people who had access to the inner workings of the tree were himself and the most loyal members of Fazbear Construction Inc. Murray couldn't do any harm by watching and spazzing from a distance, but he would need to keep on top of the situation and keep a more critical eye out for Murray. Burroughs looked back at the pause video of Murray scrambling on the ground.
What are you up to, old man?
Thus ends tonight's program of Into the Night. Will Edwin Murray be able to stop the Storyteller Project before it's too late? What does Mr. Burroughs have up his sleeve to keep Edwin Murray at bay? And what role does the Storyteller and the White Tiger animatronic play in this tale, with Gregory stuck in the Pizzaplex after hours? The Storyteller was imprisoned in the atrium before, so where did it go? Find all that and more next time on Into the Night. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to stay updated, please consider subscribing, following, or sharing this podcast. It truly helps us broaden our reach. Consider following us on our Twitter at Fazbear Podcast, joining in our Discord, or supporting us on our Patreon or merch store using the various links in the description of this episode. I have been your host, Nick, and I would like to thank you all once again for listening. Have a good night, and drive home safe.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.